Do you lead an organization, a business, a company, a nonprofit? Imagine if your people delivered truly inspired performance day in and day out. Well, it can happen. The challenge lies in knowing what motivates your people. That's where SEMA International comes in. They unlock the mystery and the magic of human motivation. To learn more, visit SEMAInternational.com. S-I-M-A International. For 50 years, they're experts in retain search, talent management, and personalized coaching. Check out SEMAInternational.com. Welcome to our second hour here with Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Pleasure to have a colleague on the line who I've known for over 10 years, Steve Darter. How are you today?
Good, Zara. How are you doing?
We're doing great. Well, let me give a brief introduction. Steve is affiliated with SEMA International, and he's president of the People Management Organization. He specializes in executive search, selection, and succession, executive development, coaching, and issues related to job fit and the utilization of employees' strengths. And Steve focuses consulting on helping organizations improve results through thus a better understanding and positioning of people and helping individuals make good decisions about their own work. His book, Managing Yourself, Managing Others, was first published in 2001 and is about to be released in its second edition. Educated at State University of New York in sociology, then graduate work in education with an additional focus on counseling and personnel, Steve's early career included being on staff and faculty at St. Joseph College, leading the career planning and placement office, and teaching graduate-level career counseling. He's also worked in insurance sales and retailing, opening and managing two businesses. So with that, Steve, should we start right with my telling a story of how we met?
Go ahead.
Yeah, you bet. Well, I had the opportunity back in 2002. I was reflecting on my own background and where I wanted to head, and met an individual from SEMA International, where Steve is affiliated, and now I am as well. And Steve actually was the coach who helped guide me through the entire motivated abilities process. And my having that map, which, by the way, I brought it with me just as a fond friend, Steve, to really guide me in some of the other career decisions that I've made since that time. So maybe you ought to take charge and talk about that whole concept of motivated abilities.
Okay. What I believe, Zara, and what my book is about, is that people are either born with or they develop early in life a natural way of doing things. We can call it natural strengths or natural abilities or a natural style. And when people are engaged in work or in activity that plays into their natural style, they tend to be more energized, more satisfied, more successful. And when they're in work that's opposite their nature, opposite the natural abilities and style, they tend to be more frustrated and not as successful and satisfied as they could. And this has implications for how we can best manage ourselves, and when we have responsibility for others, how we can best manage others. The book is also about how our natural abilities and style are gifts and talents when used properly in the right setting, but can be weaknesses if not understood and managed well. That is, I believe that a weakness in many ways is nothing more than the flip side of a strength. And let me give you an example.
Sure.
If you take someone who's very, very inventive and creative and an out-of-the-box thinker who sees new ways of doing things, that's a wonderful ability, wouldn't you agree, Zara?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Organizations want more and more of that in their companies.
Right. But what if the job involves implementing something exactly the way it was laid out, exactly the way it was set up, or exactly the way it was designed or planned, no variation? That's the job. It doesn't mean that the person can't do it, but it's not in their nature to do it that way. So the natural style, the natural ability, actually ends up becoming a weakness, or at least a potential weakness, if it's not understood and managed well. And if I were that person, Zara, and you were my manager, you'd be saying to me, Steve, can't you just do it the way it was laid out?
Follow the directions,
and I'd be saying to you, Zara, don't you understand? Don't you see? Let me give you another quick example. If you take someone who is really highly motivated to think deeply, to be very analytical, to weigh things out carefully in order to make the right decision, again, a wonderful gift.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, of course, a quick decision is needed based upon gut and feel, you know, without a lot of the information, the strength ends up becoming a weakness again, or a potential weakness, unless it is understood and managed well. So so people, I believe, in many ways, can become their own worst enemy.
Oh, in fact.
Yeah, they don't understand the natural way that they like to go about doing things.
You
Rather
bet.
Rather than them managing it, it ends up managing them if they're not aware of it.
Well, let's have some fun with this, and let me share the motivated abilities pattern, just a snippet of it, that you led me to understand back in 2002, and that was at the core, I'm all about being a pioneer, extracting potential, making an impact, affecting change, and prevailing. And, Steve, you may recall that the real gotcha for me is this element of prevailing. Is that, you know, I'm kind of like that bulldog in the old Walt Disney cartoons that would bite on the bone, you know, and just would not let go of it. So one of the challenges for me that in many regards, prevailing is a strength, right? As a leader, we're not going to stop this until we really get this done, delivered, closed, you know, get the results to the customers. However, there are times when enough already, you know, get it 80-20. But still, I'll be sitting there saying, but, you know, we still could do a little bit more. And become my own worst enemy. You're right.
Yeah, and it means you need to have around you people who embrace that. It also means that just by nature, you're going to have a certain amount of angst in your life because you're going to want things to come up against. And the pioneering is a very interesting concept, too, because it always means you want to be on the cutting edge.
Right.
You know, you want to look over the mountain, you know, at kind of the next generation, the next thing to do. Hence going from, you know, United Technologies to radio broadcasting.
Yeah, exactly.
Getting a doctorate in between.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. You're absolutely right. Perhaps we should share with our listeners first, Steve, right at this point, how is it you go about learning what those motivated abilities are?
Okay. So you know, if you look at a lot of tests, and I'm not saying tests don't work. I think tests have great accuracy. But they really, what they're doing is they're saying people are one of 10 types or 12 types or 16 types, and they ask you questions, and then they put you kind of into this, we'll call it description, one of a category, and they say you come closest to this kind of thing. We believe that everybody is unique and different, and we kind of know this. You know, if you're a parent and you look at your kids, you know, most parents, if they have, you know, more than two kids or more, they'll tell you they're very different and literally different from birth. You know that when you go into work each day, there's certain things that you just absolutely love to do, and other stuff you just as soon put on the bottom of the pile. And if your job involved all those things on the bottom of the pile, it'd be difficult to get up and motivated to do those things. So what we want to do is we want to identify what that uniqueness is. So what we do is we ask people to identify situations in their life, we'll call them achievements for lack of a better word, but situations where they've done something that they've enjoyed doing and felt that they've done well. And we ask them to go as far back in time as they can go, age 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, as far back as they can go, where they recall doing something that they enjoyed doing and felt that they did well. And give us a couple from when they were little kids, and then a couple childhood years and teen years and high school and college years and 20s and 30s and 40s, you know, however old that they are. Maybe 15, 20, 25 of these moments, again, that stick out in their mind as something they enjoyed doing and felt that they did well. And then we interview the person on these achievements. And in that interview, we're trying to find out what was happening that was giving this person this tremendous sense of satisfaction and success. But the interview is different. It's very different than, let's say, a normal conversation. Or it's very different than kind of a real probing kind of interview. It's actually a fairly passive interview. And it's passive in the sense that we're never suggesting to people what they ought to be talking about. What we're saying is, okay, here's something you did. You know, I started a clubhouse in you know, with the neighborhood kids in the backyard. We say, tell us about that. And every time as they tell us the story about that, every time they come to a word, mostly verbs, you know, where I organized, I planned, I built, I designed, we stop them theoretically and we say, how? How'd you organize?
Exactly. We just see you in action.
Exactly. We're seeing the person in action. We're asking them to go back in time and describe as if we're seeing it through their eyes. And as long as we stay true to this process of being hands-off and sort of letting them that story unfold like peeling away layers on an onion, we see themes start early in a person's life and stay very, very constant throughout their life. That process, by the way, is called SEMA, which stands for System for Identifying Motivated Abilities. And through this SEMA process, we produce what's called a MAP, which stands for a motivated abilities pattern. And a MAP becomes a description of those themes or a description of the person in action when they're most highly motivated.
You know, you said earlier that all those themes and then those motivated abilities we tease out that if not careful can work against you based on the context. So I think one area of these, this inquiry that's so interesting is we also help people understand the circumstances and the right environment that could be part of a good fit for them. Right, Steve?
Yes.
And so some of those things that would trigger, that would allow us to see, ah, so you like to be in an area or an environment that has emergencies and drama because you like to solve and resolve problems quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Or the opposite is that you appreciate an environment that's very participatory, you know, that has a stable set of, you know, requirements or just a different mood and pace, and then you can thrive.
Mm-hmm. Some people are very motivated by a lot of structure and definition, and some people by nature want a degree of kind of chaos around them that they can kind of, you know, move through. You know, in and have the freedom to move through. So we're all very different. One of the problems is people tend to see the world through their eyes. And by when they see it through their eyes, they're assuming that that's the way it ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
But if I have a nature, and say my nature is not to prevail, is not to pioneer, is to not to extract or maximize potential, but to take something and just kind of just run it the way it is and to maintain it, you know, if I have that nature, that means you have your nature. And so we can potentially clash that way.
Or, if done right.
Different.
But or done right.
To the whole concept of compatibility.
Right, compatible.
If you and I were the same, there may not be enough room on the plate for you and I to do our thing together.
Or if we
see the world differently, you know, then we're kind of fighting with each other. But same as if I'm very opposite you and very different from you, and I just want to implement it, okay, where I might resist you, at the same time, if we understand the differences in our nature and how we can complement each other, then I'm working with you and you can count on me to implement something and to maintain it while you go pioneer over the next mountain.
As a matter of fact, Steve, that was the advice you absolutely gave me at the time we went through this exercise. Because I was at a point when...
I'm consistent.
You're consistent, my friend, yes, because I was at a point where this big project we were leading really was slipping into a very important phase, which is called sustain. And some of what I was having to cope with was my own boredom. But really, it was because the circumstances were no longer triggering a possibility of pioneer. And so we worked with finding the right other people who, by the way, thrived in for the good of the organization, sustaining things and taking it, I would say, incrementally forward, and was a perfect way for me to kind of prepare for my exit to go do something different.
Right. And then if you take someone who's opposite you, take someone who likes to run and maintain something, and you ask them to build something new that's pioneering, they're just sort of like, it doesn't mean that they can't do it, but it's not their comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And again, if people don't understand this about themselves, you know, you get to hear things like, you should be able to stretch yourself, you should be able to do that. And it doesn't mean that people can't do it. It's just that, you know, if I'm always feeling like I'm on slippery ice, it's just an uncomfortable feeling.
And it's not one that they'll naturally thrive in. We're speaking with Steve Darter from SEMA International, and he's president of People Management based in Connecticut. His book is Managing Yourself, Managing Others. And Steve, I know you've done this work with individuals as well as within organizations, and allowing companies to see the power of gifting and investing in employees, seeing themselves as well as looking at how they could share that data amongst teams, correct?
Yes. So a lot of the work is really done with individuals because, you know, a company will say, can you work with this person? You know, maybe we're looking to promote him or we're looking to develop him or here's a position we're thinking of putting this individual in. But sometimes, in my current situation, there's a large client, a Fortune 30 to 40 organization, where the senior management, president and CEO and the senior VP of HR and just about everyone else at the senior level has really embraced the whole concept of the idea that if people are operating kind of in their strike zones, and to use a phrase from, you know, your previous guest, the engagement, if people are really engaged and working passionately at the things that they really love to do, not only would they be, you know, more productive and successful individually, but the whole organization would be more successful and productive. And then it ends up in different kinds of dialogues, you know. So if someone is not doing something well, rather than saying you're better or you're fired or whatever, mm-hmm. now the dialogue is more, is this something you're really motivated to do?
Or the analogy I make is how many times we think we just have round holes in the organization, and here's a person who's a square peg, and we put all this energy in the form of training even to knock off their rough edges so they can, quote, fit. But that is not a healthy match.
Right. Exactly. Maybe we can build someone around you, or maybe we need your technical knowledge even though the situation is not right. Mm-hmm. And so we know that you're going to put a little bit of rawhide between your teeth and kind of gut it out here. But if it doesn't go as well as, you know, as we had hoped, then we're in the past in some organizations, you know, here's kind of a rising star does well, and then all of a sudden gets put in an area that they're not particularly motivated to work in or the kind of person that they're asked to work for, and then they have failure, and then the organization kind of disengages or perhaps lets that person go. So in this case, if I can anticipate even beforehand that we need your technical knowledge, but we know the situation is not ideal for you, then we're recognizing kind of a sacrifice you're willing to make. You do the job, and then we get you out of that bad situation back into one that becomes highly motivating and engaging for you.
And when you say the word bad situation, you're saying, meaning here, it's one that's just you're not naturally fit towards.
Correct, yes.
Right, and I think the other thing is, it'd be interesting if, anyway, in hindsight, we'd step back and realize that sometimes people that get labeled or find themselves in the traps of being poor performers, at the end of the day, it really isn't just that they're poor fit.
You know, sometimes, for example, I'm engaged in activity that I am motivated to do, but I haven't gotten the proper training and the proper development yet. And so the organization just sees that I'm not doing well, and maybe removes me from there as opposed to gives me the kind of training and development I need to really excel. In some situations, I'm doing work that I'm not really highly motivated to do, but I'm kind of gutting it out and I'm doing it well. And what happens, for example, Zara, if just say you're not, you don't really enjoy budgeting, but I give you the assignment to budget.
He knows this, by the way, folks. That was one of my stories. I don't like to do budgeting.
and you do this project well, okay? So you budget this thing well,
right.
And I see that you do it well, and I'm your manager. What I'm likely to do is to give you even more activity in budgeting.
Exactly.
And so now I make a greater part of your job, something that you really don't enjoy doing. And so if I keep doing that to you, then what happens is your job becomes less and less motivating and satisfying. And then one day someone is saying, what happened to Zara? She used to be, you know, such a high-performing individual. Now she seems like, you know, she's all not all that motivated. And we kind of do it to the person because we don't understand it.
Well, and I think what we're also trying to say, folks, is that we allow it to do it to ourselves by not having perhaps the self-knowledge or raising our hand and saying, this isn't the right match for me. And that does take, you know, the right culture, doesn't it, Steve, though, to allow those kind of honest, trusting conversations to happen?
Well, it takes, I think, the right leadership at the top and the right managers. If I say, let's just do this to you, then I may be a little bit more guarded with the information I get. But, you know, like, for example, in this company I'm working with now, and we have put a little bit over 300 executives, you know, through this process and have had developmental conversations, and a lot of them built around conversations they have with the president of the organization. But he runs a lot of sessions where he actually reveals his own map with all pimples and warts,
mm-hmm.
and he'll say, "Dart is going to slice and dice me in front of you," and that really sets a tone for people to be very, very honest. And you know, I've been there where he's had conversations with you know, like a vice president of the organization who they were moving around and developing, who really, when I had my conversation with this vice president, he confided in me that he was pretty miserable in his job. And when he sat down with the president, who's become very astute at this stuff, he looked at the map and he looked at what they were doing and he said, "Do you like your job?" And the guy you know, turn around where normally they'd be hesitant. He said, I hate my job. And the next 20 minutes, 30 minutes of their conversation was built around, so what can we do to get you into a job that really fits, that really works well? And it's been about 5 years now, and this person is just as happy, you know, as a lark as I understand it.
Well, and I think in this day and age, this whole idea of engagement really is, it goes far beyond just making sure everybody knows what the goals, the strategies, the vision are, but it's how we can get it so that each one of us does what we do and we don't even view it as W-O-R-K, right? We get up and it's fun, it's passionate, it comes to us naturally and easily, just like those early stories you evoke to get us to talk about when we were young.
You know, the difference between work and non-work activity is pay. You know, so I may go home and, you know, I may be going into work every day and working at a job that I don't particularly enjoy. And then I go home at night and maybe I like working with my hands building things. So I go into the basement and I do my woodworking. So in one, I'm getting paid and one, I'm not, but it's still activity. So if I can get engaged in work that I love doing and at the same time get paid for it, then I'm sort of like I died and went to heaven. You know, it's like I can't believe they're actually paying me to do this.
And
it,
particularly because you're talking about, in this case, psychic income, not just necessarily also the visceral income. Well,
sure.
Thank you, Steve, for being with us again. This has been Steve Darter from SEMA International and also president of People Management in Connecticut. His book is Managing Yourself and Managing Others. Thanks for joining us here on Circles of Change today.
You're welcome, Zara. Take care.
You bet. Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.